This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
My guest tonight on Bent Notes is the chairperson of the Melbourne Women's International Jazz Festival, a festival in its 20th year, established back in 1997 by the Melbourne Jazz Co-op. The festival was handed over in 2003 to its own independent management committee. I would like to say a very big warm welcome back to Bent Notes to a drummer and composer, but tonight chairperson of the Melbourne Women's International Jazz Festival. That's a big thing to say.
Ta-da.
Sonia Horbelt.
Thanks for having me back, David. Gorgeous to be on the show. As always.
Thank you for coming in. And
pleasure.
You can see our studio audience appreciates your attendance here.
I can hear it.
What does your role as chairperson entail, and how big is the committee?
Our committee's pretty small, actually. As chairperson, I kind of oversee all the budgeting and the structure of the festival, and I have a little hand in the artistic director kind of stuff as well. You end up, you know, in small festivals, few people do lots of things. So I end up kind of doing most things, actually, is what that means. It also means marketing, it means contacting artists, it means contacting whoever needs and whatever needs and coordinating between venues and artists and that sort of thing, organising sponsorship, printing, distribution, all that kind of stuff.
Pretty much everything.
Yep.
Everything's got to be
actually,
done.
Actually, yes. I should have just started out with that. Everything, really.
When did you start work on this year's festival?
We had done some initial work mid-year, and we got some funding from APRA. That was confirmed in August, but we had also applied to the Australia Council for some funding to promote some original Australian works by female composers, and that came through.
Oh, that's
so
excellent.
It just meant that we could stretch the budget and book some more gigs and some more artists. We could put in some support acts. We pulled in a couple more venues, and you know, that's exciting because there's not a lot of money out there and it's always a juggle. So when there's some money to support that, it's a really exciting thing to be able to employ artists. You know, and most of our budget predominantly goes on artists. It goes to paying people. You know, we do so many gigs for so very little money. As Sally Ford will attest to, you know, all those gigs where you're paying for X dollars to three people and a dog, that, you know, when there's finally an opportunity to pay people what professionally they should be getting, it's exciting for us.
That must be very exciting to be able to, yeah, to do that.
And acknowledge the level of professionalism amongst the musicians that we have here in Melbourne.
And have a festival that's, yeah, then got the musicians that you want to get the outcome that you're looking, yeah, after. Question in my mind, what is, when you start out looking at the festival, what's your objective or your mission state?
Well, we always try and book gigs that are not a regular gig that you can go and see. So for a start, it might be a CD launch or it might be a new ensemble. It might be we bring a group together. Some of the groups that we'll talk about tonight are very much that. And then, yeah, it's trying to find some emerging artists who need a platform to launch from and giving them an opportunity to get a bit of a rep so that they can take that next step.
That there was a bit of a fanfare for,
yep,
you.
Because that next step is that important.
I suppose that it makes the point that the next step,
yes,
is important to actually,
yeah,
get people up there on,
yeah,
stage performing,
yep,
and to get the young performers up,
yep,
there. What do they get out of participating into a festival such as the Melbourne Women's International
say
Jazz
that
Festival?
Well, what it means is that they can say that they've performed in a festival that has a really great reputation, and it means that other larger festivals, labels and funding bodies will actually look at their applications with a bit of a closer look and give them an opportunity to take that next step, you know. And it's not just the younger artists, it's older artists who are forming new ensembles, and it's, you know, for women, it's women who are returning from maternity leave. It's all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of broader issues for women in the industry currently, and that's a really important thing. You know, is multi-tiered in terms of the opportunities that it provides for women across the spectrum.
Those opportunities that you're providing, they then stretch out into the other festivals that are around too, because they're, I suppose you could say, their name gets known out in the industry.
Yep. And it means that they've been able to produce a set of, you know, festival-worthy material. Often it's that push that they need to have a target effort to get to release something, whether it be a CD or to get together a body of work or to create a special project. We've had some projects with visuals that have combined that sort of thing, and you know, it gives them a platform to launch that stuff into a bigger sphere.
Started on Friday night, two nights
ago. Yes, we've done 3 days. The weekend's been a bit of a teaser. Friday night was Sharni Russell at Uptown, and the last 2 days we've had some really great young groups, Kathleen Halloran's trio and Quadriford at our festival sponsor, Two Birds Brewing. How great is that? Because of course that is Two Birds in Spotswood. So they've been a huge hit, those two gigs, and it's such a great space. And so that's a bit of a teaser, and the festival really kicks off next Sunday to Sunday, that December 3 to 10, predominantly at the Jazz Lab, but there are a couple of other gigs.
I must ask you about the venues in a short time. Last year you were at pretty much Bennett's Lane, yep, was your base. Of course, that's closed.
Yep.
What venues, I will ask this question now just before we have a listen to some music, but what venues have you got? Just very quickly run down the list of venues. You've mentioned Two Birds.
We've got the Jazz Lab predominantly, which I guess is currently the new room in Melbourne that's taken over from the Jazz Lab that was at Bennett's Lane, even though the new Bennett's Lane will open. Lots of music happening at the Jazz Lab. We're also doing a gig at Dizzy's Jazz Club, and we did Uptown on Friday night as well. And then, of course, Two Birds, which has been fantastic. And there is a book launch with Chris McNulty at Paris Cat as well that was a very late addition to the program. So there you go.
That's great to hear that she's getting to launch the book here in Melbourne as well as overseas and elsewhere.
Four seasons in one day, lying in the depths of your imagination, worlds above and worlds below. Sun shines on the black cloud hanging over the domain. Even when you're feeling warm.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
You are listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9, and my guest on Bent Notes is Melbourne drummer and composer and chairperson of the Melbourne International Jazz Festival, Sonia Horbelt. But I can... Yes, we need a big fanfare, Corey.
Yeah, we need that fanfare, Corey.
Here it comes. It's on its way. There we go. Oh, well. Mm. Applause, keep the applause going for two other guests with us tonight. We have Sally Ford and from Melbourne and Brisbane's Ali Hoyt. Welcome to Bent Notes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Now, Ali's on the phone and Sally's here in the studio. Thank you both for dropping in tonight. Two of the featured artists at this year's, I'm just going to say the festival, otherwise
yep.
I'll muck the name up each and every time.
Extra half an hour.
Now, we've just heard a piece of music there, Ali, one of yours. It was a shortened radio edit, we think.
Yep,
four seasons in one day.
It's my fault.
Shorter than usual, was it? I must have said the wrong one.
It just got lost in translation somewhere.
Or it could have been me for a radio ad. Maybe I just spliced it and went, because you only need 30 seconds. Oops, that could have been me.
Right.
I'll stick to the drums.
So my question to you, Ali, and then also to Sally, is why are festivals such as the Melbourne Women's International Jazz Festival an important part of your jazz landscape?
If I can start.
You may.
Yeah, cool. I think for me, being a female in jazz, I think it's a beautiful thing to be able to support the community of women in jazz and be able to continue the dialogue of being part of that community. And I feel it's a beautiful thing to be a part of that.
Sally.
And for me, I guess, I mean, to start off with, the band I have at the moment, Dr. Ananda, is not, you wouldn't think that we're traditionally playing jazz. I mean, a lot of it is improvised. So, you know, as Maceo Parker said once famously, what we play is 2% jazz and 98% funk. So, you know, there's good music and there's good music. So for me, it was a great opportunity, as Sonia was mentioning before, to do something that we've not done with Dr. Ananda, which is to have guests. So we've got four female guests, which is just thrilling to me. So this is an opportunity for us to, you know, to experiment with what it's like to have, you know, a big horn section, and it's all women. So that's just very exciting.
It's very exciting indeed. So you're saying four guests. This is four guests within the one set?
Well, we're going to do two sets that night. We're playing at Jazz Lab on December the 8th. Yep. Is that right? Friday, December the 8th. Yes, we'll do our regular repertoire, but we've actually sacked asked our trombone player, and he's very understanding. He said he would have worn a frock, but we've got Audrey Pound playing trumpet, a young trumpet player, Darcy Foley playing trombone, Alicia Brooks playing soprano sax, and Karen Burgess going to be joining us on percussion. So it's a fantastic opportunity to play with an expanded band, and that means that the charts are slightly different. There'll be more improvising, and there'll be a diff because normally we're three horns, and so it's an opportunity to stretch out.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. I think festivals are really important for that because it costs money to have extra people to start new ensembles, to pay people to rehearse or not pay people to rehearse, or to just find a decent fee for a gig. And so I think that's a really important role for festivals, that they have some money to input into producing new work and giving artists an opportunity to have to further their artistic endeavours and the projects that they have a vision for.
And perhaps, sorry, also, but in this case, for these young players, may not have played in the sort of Latin cumbia boogaloo style before. So, that, you know, it's a cross, what's the word I'm looking for? Germination.
Cross-genre.
Cross-genre-ing. I can't say that.
So it's providing these four guests an opportunity to play in a different style to what they might be used to.
Yeah.
But it's offering you an opportunity to try something a bit different. Is this something that you've done before with previous bands around the place, or is it something you've had in your mind that you'd like to do, just needed the opportunity?
Oh, no, we've done it before with other bands. We've had, you know, and again, it's like a special gig. We did some gigs a few years ago now, but we expanded an 8-piece band to a 14-piece band to have a really big horn section. We called it Descarga Total, which just means a massive jam session. And that was down at the Art Centre. And we did that 3 summers in a row.
Well, that'd be fun.
Yeah, it was really good.
So when you say massive jam, how many extra musos?
Well, in that band we have, normally that was with my band that was me and the Pachuco Playboys, and we were a 7 to 8 piece, and we expanded to a 14-piece. We had Paul Williamson's Hammond Combo, so, you know, that was a And then 1 year we had Banana Oil, and 1 year we had Joe Camilleri. So, you know, I just love that. And then something else happens, you know, when you're playing with different musicians.
I should ask the question, who is Dr. Hernandez?
Dr. Hernandez, well, he's a Venezuelan, literally, or what, my band?
Your band.
It's the name of my band.
But are you saying that you've actually named your band after a real person?
I am.
Oh, wow. Well, yes. We better hear who he is as well.
Well, he was a doctor. Funnily enough, that's why he's called Dr. Hernandez. He's a Venezuelan doctor. He worked with a lot of poor people, and he sort of became almost sanctified in Venezuela in the early 20th century. I was looking for a name for a band. I was actually in a shop in New York, luckily, because I'd been on tour there with another band, and I just saw this little figurine, and I said to the guy, "Who is that?" And he said, "That is Dr. Hernandez." And he just assumed that I would know who it was, and I didn't, but I bought it, and I don't know. We do a song from Venezuela that's called Caballo Viejo, which I think maybe we're going to hear in a little while. It's a very old cumbia. There was a connection, but, you know, why does anyone call their band anything?
Something that strikes you at the time.
That's right.
How many pieces is the band?
It's normally a 5-piece. There's myself, I play alto, flute, and I'm a singer. Patrick Cronin plays trumpet and percussion. Peter Slipper plays trombone. Dave Joseph plays percussion. And Michael Javier plays keyboards. But there's someone missing from there, as you might have noticed. We don't have a bass player, so we're kind of experimenting with electro cumbia, and a lot of the stuff is on loops, which provides various challenges of technology. Not to me, but because, you know, if the technology decides to go haywire, what's left is, you know, the acoustic instruments. So
yes,
it can be tricky.
the creativeness of the human person to carry on without the electronics.
Yeah. Machines can be very annoying. You know, so it is kind of experimental, but electro cumbia is a genre. It has been for some time. So.
You mentioned a song there, and I'm not going to try to pronounce it because I'd make a complete mess up of it.
Please do.
So I'll ask you to introduce that song again, and we'll have a listen to that and then have a chat to Ellie.
Okay, this is a song that is called Caballo Viejo, The Old Horse.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
That was Caballo Viejo by Sally Ford and Dr. Hernandez.
Thank you so much for pronouncing that, Sally.
I can't even say that.
Isn't it great how some people can just get their tongues around those languages?
What happens when you speak Spanish?
So, Sally, that was just a sample of what we're going to hear at the Jazz Lab on Friday night.
Yes.
With the Sally Ford Clinic featuring Dr. Hernandez and your guest specialists.
Yes.
And the penny has just dropped that we have very much a medically focused name.
And also because cumbia and boogaloo is good for what ails you.
It's very fun.
Yep.
Yeah.
So maybe we should prescribe a night at the Jazz Lab.
Yep.
I reckon that's
you're
the way
to go. Dr. David.
And Ali, you're still with us on the phone. Thank you so much for calling in.
Absolutely. Great to be here.
We've heard a little bit here about the Sally Ford Clinic. What is happening with Ali Hoyt? Because I've had a look and what I can see is it's the composer's voice. And yet, from what I read, it looks as if the composers are not the person who's actually performing.
No.
So what are you doing for us?
Yeah, so basically this new project, a few months ago, I have been really thinking about what I want to do next, not only for a record, but, you know, a project. In my mind, I sort of said, you know, what is something that I'm really passionate about? And I realised there's an insane amount of beautiful women composers out there that I would love to work with, people that inspire me, like Andrea Keller, Jan Slater, Martha Bartz, you know, the list goes on. And so I thought, wow, wouldn't it be amazing if I could work with these incredible composers and instrumentalists to put together a project? So basically called Sonia and said, what do you think about this project? And Sonia's like, oh my God, let's do it. So essentially I've got 12 composers on board and basically we're celebrating women composers in collaboration with myself. So I've had 12 composers send me their music and I basically have been learning it, going to showcase and arrange, you know, putting it all together for the Women's International Jazz Festival.
So it is the Ali Hoyt arrangements of Aussie female musos.
Yeah, so a lot of the musicians and composers have arranged it as well. So essentially I'm singing it, you know, my way, where I'm singing the music of those composers, yes.
And how did you choose the composers?
Good question. So there's a lot of these musicians that I have either played with or have heard that I am incredibly inspired by. Someone like Andrea Keller, I have always wanted to work with and I've loved her music. And so for me, it was a little bit nerve-wracking contacting all these people that I've looked up to and gone, wow, you know, would you like to do this project? And, you know, would you have me sing one of your songs? And it's been a beautiful, beautiful journey. And I guess how I picked them was I love their compositions. I love who they are as a musician and what they do. Yeah.
When you've chosen the musos, you've then got to get the music from them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as if these musos are people who just write one hit and then cease. They write, I won't use the word incessantly, but they write a huge library, a huge repertoire.
Yeah.
Who got to choose?
So it's been interesting because some composers will say, look, they're writing for this project. So they'll go, okay, I have you in mind and I'm going to write a tune. So I've had a number of composers actually give me a number of songs that they've written for me with me in mind and then I've gone and had a listen and gone, oh, I really love this tune and picked that. There have been other composers that have basically had a few tunes that they have written and said, you know, and they might have already recorded years ago, but said, what about this one? Or I can think of you doing this and have sent me a few. So I've kind of gone on and picked one. But then I've also had one gone, look, pick anything, like go through my catalogue, whatever song, whatever your favourite song of my whole catalogue, you choose it, which has been kind of fun because I've got to kind of go over people's back catalogues and through a lot of music and going, oh my God, this one tune. So it's been fun.
That must have been an amazing experience. Ali, look, I've got to interrupt you, I'm afraid. Yeah. Now, that's Rex. That's our studio dog. And he sits here in the studio and he tells us when there's a message waiting for us. So we have some messages from our listeners. Corey, what have we got?
So we've got one message from South Yarra. And South Yarra writes, hello, Bent Notes. So great to hear women in jazz. Awesome stuff, guys.
And that's from South Yarra. Thank you, South Yarra.
And we also have from Melina a email. Melina writes, more women in music, especially jazz. Could you kindly ask your guests what they think of artists like Esperanza Spalding and what type of specialist skills do women bring jazz? Fabulous
Ali,
show.
Would you like to answer that question? And thank you, Leah.
That's a hard question.
It is, yes.
Please pipe in, Sonia, at any time. And
okay.
So, yeah, look, I think Esperanza Spalding is absolutely incredible and what she has to offer for what she does as a vocalist, as a bass player, as a faculty member. I think she's a faculty member at Berkeley. I just came back from America, living in Boston, studying a Masters of Jazz Performance. And so someone like that is an incredible person that, you know, no matter what gender, she's incredible what she does, but she also is inspiring more women to do what we do. And I think for me, she's absolute inspiration and we need more of that. And, you know, there's that idea, we were talking about this, Sonia, earlier about you can't be what you can't see.
Exactly.
And so when you see more of that, you go, wow, like, I can do that. I can be a bass player. I have a female bass player. I play with in a little folk band, but we also play in a jazz band. And she's a badass musician. And it's inspiring to see, you know, people ask her, oh, geez, that instrument's so big. You know, you shouldn't be playing that. Or and you realise that the more you see it, it becomes normal. And so for me, Esperanza Spalding is just bee's knees. She's fantastic.
Yeah, I got a really fantastic email this week about the festival. A woman was asking me if she could bring her 11-year-old drumming daughter to come and see the drummer in Laduca on the Tuesday night gig. Now, also on that gig with Hailim Kim from Korea is Simon Barker from Sydney, who is one of the greatest drummers in Australia. But she's bringing her to see the girl in Laduca. I just thought, you know, like, and I said, absolutely, please. She was saying, you know, can she come to the club? And I said, you know, because you're a guardian. And if you're her guardian, absolutely. And I just think, you know, there's more visibility to inspire young players. That's the idea behind the festival, the visibility of women and particularly instrumentalists and band leaders, you know.
Yeah, because, and that's the thing, you know, like, boy, you can sort of think that, you know, male musicians just seem to have, you know, so much confidence, in fact, sometimes too much compared to their talent. But because they just see men all around them in, you know, in most bands. And it's such an issue, not just only for young women, but for women of any age to have role models. It's essential. Yeah.
And one of the big things about this festival is, I think it's the Monday night, December the 4th, is student night. And what better way to do two things? One, to get students involved in the festival, but two, to have them involved in such a fashion that they will go and see other gigs through the festival and they will
and
get
to
see these
people. And just to introduce them to venues too, you know, just to get them to see this is what a club looks like, this is where you can come and see music like this, get your parents to drag you along, you know, because those clubs are kid-friendly and if they come with a guardian, it's really important for them to get a sense of being able to own a stage in a club like that. You know, there are lots of jam sessions that go on in Melbourne, but very often girls just last 2 minutes on the stage, or they don't get up at all unless they're in a group.
Because it can be intimidating.
Yeah, I think it's really important for them to feel like that's where they can belong.
Mm.
We have another message. We better get Rex out. He's missed it. We have a message from Hoffler who's saying, brilliant stuff, ladies. Right. Brilliant stuff indeed. The Melbourne Women's International Jazz Festival. I will get it. Look, it's sitting right here in front of me. I will get it right.
I've said it a lot, believe me.
It is on as we speak.
Yep.
It is underway. The website is mwijf.org. All the information is there. There's a beautiful program that you can print out. It's in PDF and it has information about every gig in the festival, and I've had a look through. There's a few there that look very, very interesting. Unfortunately, I've missed the starting two, but that's all right. I've got plenty of time for other gigs. I wish you all the best to the three of you for your upcoming gigs. Sonia, you haven't got a headline act yourself, but you're in lots of them.
I'm kind of not, actually, which is really good. I get to just hang and see all the stuff. I did last minute play for Shani Russell on Friday night, other than that, which was just delightful, can I say. Just hidden gem in Australia is Shani Russell, and that was with the great Ange Davis and also Annette Yates, who's back into playing. So, but yeah, other than that, I'm not playing this year, which is really, it just means I can enjoy it, which is fantastic.
Nice to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Enjoy it as much as you can.
She Indeed. Might be a visiting specialist.
Yeah, I might be a visiting
in
specialist.
In the clinic, I think.
Can I add something?
You may indeed, Ellie.
One of her compositions is also in my show.
Oh,
Dora,
yay.
Playing
Excellent.
Sonia. Yep. She's not playing, but we're playing her.
Oh, fantastic. Look, Ali, Sally and Sonia, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you,
on BitNotes. Really appreciate
Thanks,
that.
Dr. Have David.
Have a fantastic festival.
Cheers.
And we look forward to having having you back in studio at some time in the future.
Thanks so much, David.
Thank you.
My guests on Bent Notes tonight have been Melbourne drummer and composer and chairperson of the Melbourne International Jazz Festival, Sonia Horbelt, vocalist Ellie Hoyt and saxophonist Sally Ford. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.